The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hello, all persons. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Brad Sesmat Show. It is entirely possible that you have determined at this point that this is not Brad Sesmat. Jeff Munn, radio voice of Arizona State. Wait, I'll think of it. Arizona State University women's basketball, stadium voice for Phoenix Rising FC. We still haven't lost in a long time. They beat Sacramento 2-1 Friday night. And a whole bunch of other things, including ASU football pre and post on the radio, which starts this Thursday. But today I'm right here with you. I'm glad of that fact. And we welcome you to the Monday edition of the Brad Sesmat Show. By the way, Brad's continuing his recuperation from a double knee replacement, doing very well. Texted with him a little bit Saturday night. We had some shared some thoughts about the U of A football game. And I'll share some thoughts, too, here momentarily. We got a lot to get to today. Amongst other things, we will visit with a gentleman we've had on the show before when I filled in, Las Vegas Review-Journal columnist and ESPN Radio Las Vegas host Ed Graney. It's been a couple weeks since this story came out about the D-backs having some dialogue with Henderson, which is a Las Vegas suburb, about the possibility of relocating there. And while that talk has kind of died down, I still think it's worth visiting with Ed because the Review-Journal sent a reporter to Chase Field, the last homestand, I think, or the one before that, to just kind of spend a homestand at Chase Field and get a sense of what the Diamondbacks have going on here in town. So we'll talk with Ed about that, about the NBA prospects. Because Vegas is getting to be that town. Vegas is, to me, what Phoenix was in the late 80s. Everybody wants to move there. Every owner wants to use it as leverage. And the leverage part is something that, as a long time, a native Phoenician, just bothered me greatly. We will also have Luke Lipinski will be with us to visit with Jordan Simone, who's my partner on ASU football pre and post game. I'm going to bring in my buddy Eric Sorensen. Let me use my powers of telepathy here to bring him in. There he is. I can only go corner screen today, E. I had a long night last night. Had to do the morning show at KTAR this morning, so I've been up since 3.
Well, thank you for your efforts.
You keep mentioning before we came on the air today my radio partner, and I thought, Maura McHugh's here? No, it's Jordan Simone. He'll be on to give us a big picture look at the Sun Devils as they open things Thursday night against Kent State.
Yeah, more on the season and less on Kent State. I think that's kind of the narrative that we all want to hear, right?
That sounds pretty appropriate. Did you hear what Kirk Herbstreit had to say about ASU on game day Saturday?
I just heard from a distance that he thinks good things are happening this year.
Like the Pac-12 title game against Washington.
It's You know, the South is wide open. I know Utah is the favorite, but the ASU's got a shot.
I'm telling you that, yes, they do have a shot. But if I had to pick a team to Utah, Phil Steele said this a month ago. He thinks Utah is going to run the table, go undefeated, and get into the college football playoff. Well, if they're undefeated, they better be in the college football playoff. But he thinks they can go 13-0 prior to the playoff. And you know what? I'd say they got a shot at it. With that defense, they could easily go 13-0.
It's tough. It's tough to win all your games in college football.
This is true.
Because college kids can't play 13 perfect games. So in the games that you're not perfect, you still have to try to figure out a way to beat a team that you probably should beat anyway.
Well, yeah.
And that's why, like, with Clemson, their over-under is 11.5. And I had this discussion with my friend, and he said, I'm taking Clemson and the over. And I said,
which means they got to be perfect.
Which means they have to run the table. And I said, I would not make that bet. Because there are things in college football that happen. Like, they should have last year lost at home to Syracuse.
Right.
Yes, they lost their top two quarterbacks, but you just don't know. You know, every week is like a new chapter in college football. That's what makes the sport so great, in my opinion. So.
Herm Edwards has said the thing that is great about college football is you don't know with 19-year, 20-year-old kids.
Exactly.
You just don't know. But you say that, I did watch last night the ESPN film, Football is Us.
It's on my DVR.
That is a great
film. I'm probably going to watch it tonight, actually.
Great film. I think I went over everything we got on the show today. So let's dive into what's going on in the world of sports. And it's brought to you by Sagicor Now. Are you making financial decisions? Don't worry, friends. E disappeared. He'll be back. I kind of need to take an aspirin and get a little better mental telepathy going to bring him back. If you're planning for the future, or more importantly, if you haven't planned for the future, you ought to consider it, and you ought to talk to our friends at Sagicor Now, because they will not only explain it to you in plain English, they'll do it in a way that will give you immediate peace of mind, which is what really you're purchasing when you do business with Sagicor Now. So sagicornow.com, great place to find out how you can take care of the ones you love the most, and we thank them for their support of this program. The Cardinals played in Minnesota on Saturday, lost to the Vikings. Kyler Murray played well. That's pretty much the story of this game. I'll tell you what, this preseason has been a pretty strong argument for getting rid of preseason. Because it has reached the point now, and if you want to jump in on this, feel free. This is getting to the point now where coaches, they're not playing, even in the third game, they're not playing their regulars very much. And you start to wonder to yourself, okay, why are we doing this? Why don't we just do scrimmages? You know, it seems to work for the colleges that they can arrive at roster decisions without the benefit of preseason games. And it's really starting to make you think, and I don't know if the players will ever agree to playing 18 games in a regular season, but this exercise of four preseason games is just like enough already. It doesn't go anywhere.
Especially when we get to this week. I mean,
well, that's been the case for a long time.
I know, and it's just, it's...
But even with week three, you look around the league and there weren't a lot of teams. It used to be, even as recently as like 10 years ago, the starters in week three of the preseason would go first half and maybe a couple series into the third quarter.
Sure.
Not anymore. I mean, Murray didn't play into the third quarter. And if there's anybody that needs reps right now, it's Kyler Murray. But by the same...
I thought he played well, though.
He did play well. But my point is, if you're not going to run your regular guys out there in week three for more than a few series, that's proof positive that we got to rethink the whole preseason thing. I mean, here's what's stunning. Back at when I was a teenager, the NFL played six preseason games. Can you imagine how torturous that had to be? Six preseason games. College football, the U of A lost to Hawaii, 45-38. Khalil Tate was tackled a yard shy of the end zone. I heard a great story. Somebody tweeted the Cats traveled 5.2 million yards to get to Honolulu and came up a yard short. That's rough. But I'll tell you this. There were three things I'll hit very quickly that came out of that game for me Saturday. Number one, the U of A defense is bad. It's bad. There's just no other way to say it. It was as much a loss for the Pac-12 as it was for the U of A. The Mountain West has had some pretty serious dominance of the Pac-12 the last few years. And the other thing was, Rick Neuheisel, who was doing the game on television on CBS Sports Network with Aaron, I believe it was Aaron Taylor. I could be wrong about that. Carter Blackburn was the play-by-play guy. There was a sequence with about 4 minutes to go in the game when the U of A was trying to kick a field goal to get within seven. And in our next segment, I'll try to go a little deeper into this. But he was really critical of Kevin Sumlin and his assistants for what was just basically a sloppy execution of a field goal. And if you're not aware of it, I'll go into greater detail about it in our next segment. But that just wasn't a good performance. Hawaii was sloppy too. Let's not overlook the fact they turned it all over a ton. But they end up winning the game 45-38. And Hawaii gets another Pac-12 team in their next game at Oregon State. I believe that's this weekend. This weekend? No, the weekend after. And if they win that one, then Hawaii can go ahead and declare themselves the champs of the Pac-12 because they will have beaten two Pac-12 teams. Very quickly, D-backs lose the series in Milwaukee, do salvage the final game yesterday. Friday night was particularly troubling to me in this respect. The Brewers are ahead of you in the standings, and Jordan Lyles no-hits them for six innings. And that really tells you, boy, this is really getting mysterious. If he can't do more than six no-hit innings against Jordan Lyles, they did end up scoring a run. They lost Friday night. They lost Saturday night. Chase Anderson, the former D-back, beat him Saturday night. And they did salvage the final game yesterday. Now, they're a game below 500. They're still technically in the wild card race, but I don't know. I hate to say it, but they'll be in San Francisco tonight. We'll see. We'll take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the U of A game, and then I'm going to get into a discussion of this thing here, how powerful this is, and how you've got to treat it with great care. We'll also talk about the and I'm sorry I didn't get to this right away, the Andrew Luck story. There's angles to it that are shocking, surprising, and frankly nauseating, and I bet you know what I'm talking about. But stick around anyway. The Brad Sesmat Show continues after this break on Sports360AZ.com. The Brad Sesmat Show on a Monday. Jeff Munn for Brad, and we trust you had a nice weekend. Andrew Luck did not have a great weekend. The Indianapolis Colts quarterback, I'm kind of misleading you a little bit. He announced his retirement Saturday night, and I assume the word got out during the Colts-Bears preseason game in Indianapolis. And basically what it comes down to is he's been on and off the injured list so much that it mentally has worn him down. And he said it's taken the joy away from playing football. The Colts are letting him keep the bonus money that under some circumstances he might have been forced to give back. But they said, no, you can keep it. Shocking news to say the least. Shocking on a couple of levels, just the mere fact that at 29 he would end his career. Shocking because this is another case of a player saying, look, the physical toll is too much playing football, and I'm just not going to pay that price anymore. The other thing that's been shocking is the reaction to this news in two corners. Number one, and that picture you're seeing on the video side is from the press conference Saturday night. The two things that bother me about this story, number one, Doug Gottlieb, who is a national radio host, I believe for Fox Sports Radio, sent out a tweet in which he said Andrew Luck retiring is the most millennial thing possible. He was soundly, and I don't mean criticized, he was barbecued. Including by Troy Aikman, who used some references you're not supposed to use in public in talking to Doug Gottlieb. And I can't help but say this. I got the feeling that Gottlieb was just doing it to see who was paying attention, doing it for effect. Gee, a Fox host doing something for effect? That's never happened before. The other thing was the story that as Andrew Luck was walking off the field Saturday night in Indianapolis, I don't know how many fans did it, but one is too many. They booed Andrew Luck. I don't mind saying this. Those people that booed him are sick, and they need some help. Not necessarily mental health help, but just get their priorities straight. And that troubles me, too. When I heard the story that these fans were booing, the first thing that popped into my mind, and it's sad, but this is what I thought. I bet they all just got done with their fantasy drafts. And that's the world we live in now. Fantasy is, in effect, gambling. And if you drafted Andrew Luck, you're probably not going to do real well in your fantasy league. And apparently to these people, that was more important than Andrew Luck living a healthy life. Okay.
And the worst part, Mon, of all this is
yes.
that Andrew Luck did everything the right way.
He sure did.
He was a great teammate. He played hurt.
You betcha.
He put in the extra time. He was a leader on the field. He was loved in the community. And just to see some people taking that stance of, why are you retiring? I mean,
Just unbelievable.
He had a laundry list of injuries. And part of this, I honestly put on the Colts because they did not protect their investment when it came to the offensive line at all.
No. And you can see on Twitter a number of videos of the hard hits he took over the years quarterbacking the Colts. I applaud him for having the sense, and I've always gotten the feeling from reading things about Andrew Luck is that he had a much bigger picture view of the world.
Oh, no doubt.
Than just being about football.
Stanford education.
Yeah, and I'm sorry to see it come to an end like this, but I certainly understand his reasoning. That's the other thing. There was a guy, a host on ESPN Radio yesterday, who said he understood why fans booed him. What? You understood? I don't understand. The guy sounded, I don't know his name, but he's a weekend host at ESPN Radio. It sounded like he was defending the fans who were booing him. You understand? Then clear it up for us, because I don't. I don't get it. I don't get why you boo the guy. Which ties into something that I wanted to speak about for a few moments. Saturday morning was a grand and glorious time at the Munn residence because the season's first edition of ESPN College Game Day came on. You've heard me say it before. I think it's right up there with Inside the NBA as the best pregame show on television, sports television. But there was a moment Saturday that reminded all of us who sit behind these items of how powerful this thing is. Desmond Howard, who's one of the regular contributors, or he's one of the commentators on College Game Day, Reese Davis, the host, turned to him and started asking him about Michigan's lack of success against Ohio State. Desmond Howard is a Michigan alum. He turned and uttered a line that I'm not going to repeat, but essentially it's a line that has been said by the comedian Dave Chappelle on his TV show, which I think ran on Comedy Central and on cable. It included a word that you should not use in public. The phrase essentially makes reference to violence against women. There is nothing to suggest that Desmond Howard advocates violence against women. He was going for a joke, and he failed badly. He did issue what I thought was a completely insincere apology later on in the show. Like, let's just sweep this under the rug and we'll move on. I'm going to get to it. Let me just say this. All of us in this business have at one time or another said or done things in front of a microphone or a camera that we regretted. I've done it. I'll be the first to stand up and admit I've done things that were embarrassing in front of a microphone. We all do it. When you're on live, you're going to make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. So I'm not saying, how could Desmond Howard make a mistake like that? You do make mistakes when you're on live television and you're trying to make judgments quickly. But that's the thing. If he had thought it out a little bit before saying it, he probably doesn't say it. Well, I hope he wouldn't say it. And, well, again, I've seen no evidence that Desmond Howard would ever participate in something that resulted in violence against women. I wouldn't be bothered by the fact if ESPN decided to suspend him for a couple of games. I don't think he should lose his job, but I do think he ought to sit for a couple of weeks because, number one, it does send the message from ESPN to the public that we don't condone this kind of dialogue on our airwaves. The other reason I think he should be suspended, to be a reminder not only to Desmond Howard, but all of us who sit behind these things, that these are powerful instruments. And we have to watch what we say as best we can. Sometimes we're going to make mistakes, admittedly. And there have been lots of mistakes made by people, and a couple of them have flat out upset me personally. The one example, and I don't want to mention names because this person's not here to defend himself, and I don't think it's fair for me to go after somebody by name. But when Steve Keim was arrested for what turned out to be extreme DUI last summer, it was on a Saturday, and a sports talk show host at one of the more prominent sports radio stations in the market went on the air and said, "I give Steve Keim mad props for turning himself in." Okay, a horrible statement to make. First of all, he didn't turn himself in, he was arrested. Number two, he was not just past the legal intoxication limit, he was about 10 miles past it. He didn't deserve mad props for anything. And it was a really not well thought out statement by the host. sometimes the best teacher is experience and making mistakes. But these things are powerful instruments, these microphones. And all of us in this business, and I'll include myself in it, have to treat the microphone very, very carefully. We don't know who's out there listening and watching. We know people are. And not everybody got what Desmond Howard was getting at. I never watched Dave Chappelle's show, so I didn't understand what it was he was going for. And you have to think of that beforehand. So again, I don't think he should lose his job, but it wouldn't bother me if ESPN said, hey, you know what, you're going to take this week off, and we're going to tell people that you're going to sit on the bench for a week. What else did I want to mention? Oh, the U of A game and Rick Neuheisel, who was doing color for CBS Sports Network. About 4 minutes to go in the game, the Cats are down 10. They get to a fourth and whatever it is at about the Hawaii 33. They have to kick a field goal. And even Neuheisel said, I know you're down 10. You've got to take the field goal here and hope you get the ball back, and then you can score a touchdown, which almost worked. So the Cats send their kicking unit out. They can't get lined up right. They get flagged for delay of game. Have you ever seen a field goal unit get flagged for delay of game? So they move them back. They get set. Somebody jumps. Another flag. 5 yards. False start. They move them back another 5 yards. Unit gets set. They're not lined up right. Kevin Sumlin's got to burn a timeout. Now, they finally got the field goal. Rick Neuheisel buried the Arizona coaching staff. And he should have. I don't care that it's the opening game. There's no excuse for that. They looked disorganized and sloppy. And I know a lot of people in Tucson are very angry at Kevin Sumlin. I'll say this before we go to a break. Remember the circumstances Kevin Sumlin walked into a year ago March or February. He's had one recruiting class. Most of those kids aren't kids he recruited. I hate to tell you this, Arizona. You're going to have to wait this out. You're just going to have to take it for a little while until he gets the guys that he wants in that program in that program. And they're going to start with the defensive side of the ball because, man, they couldn't stop a thing against Hawaii. Even after they changed quarterbacks, Hawaii was still going zip, zip, zip down the field. And it is bad news for the Pac-12. A lot of the dialogue on that telecast on Saturday night was about the Pac-12 struggling for respect. And here comes a team that a lot of people feel can be a bowl team in the Pac-12, and they get beat by 10 at Hawaii. By the way, Vegas doesn't get it really wrong too often, but they had Arizona as an 11-point favorite going into that game. And when I saw that, I said, there is no way Hawaii is going to get beat by 11 points. No way. And there was a basketball game 30 years ago involving the U of A. When I saw that, I thought, there's no way they're going to do that. And they didn't. Story for another day. Speaking of Vegas, Ed Graney is one of our go-to guys. Top columnist with the Las Vegas Review Journal Sports Department. And an ESPN Radio Las Vegas host. Will talk to him about these recent stories about the D-backs and Las Vegas. Coming up next on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Monday on the Brad Sesmatch Show, I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of Arizona State Women's Basketball, stadium announcer for Phoenix Rising FC, among other things. And I wanted to spend a few moments with a guy that I have a lot of respect for. I've had him on the show when I filled in here in the past. He is the lead columnist for the Las Vegas Review Journal and has gone into this sordid business of broadcasting as an ESPN Radio Las Vegas host. Ed Graney joins us for a few minutes on the program. First of all, Ed, how are things in Las Vegas today?
Well, they're hot, and you know what that means.
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact.
Same problem.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you feel about it, Jeff, in your neck of the woods, but for me, when it's 110 and above, I don't even worry about it anymore. So hot, but people are excited here about college football, and obviously the books are getting crazy because of the NFL. And so this is a good time of the year to be in Vegas because right when football starts, things start happening around town.
Yeah, it's a fun time up there. The reason I wanted to have you on, and this story has kind of died down in the last couple of weeks, but right after this story surfaced that the Review Journal broke about discussions between the Arizona Diamondbacks and the city of Henderson, your paper sent a reporter to cover a homestand. I believe the reporter was here for the entire homestand. And I wanted to talk about that. Let me just start with the basic question. What were your reporter's impressions of what they saw here during that homestand at Chase Field?
Well, I can talk about it because I was the one who came. And
was it you? I didn't realize it was you, Ed.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, not at all. I went down there with Chase Stevens, a photographer, and Cassie Soto, our videographer, and we did stay. We saw a game against the Phillies, and it was more to talk to people at Chase and then to talk to people around town. You know, when Henderson broke the story, I guess we weren't surprised. Henderson obviously is a community in Las Vegas with a lot of land and a desire to get into sports. They won the bid to build the Raiders practice facility. They bid on the AAA ballpark that eventually went to Summerlin, the competing town at the other end of the city for the Aviators ballpark, so they lost out on that bid. So they're a town with money, with land, and with a desire to be in pro sports. So none of us were really surprised that they made contact with someone like Diamondbacks and started that kind of conversation back and forth about bringing a team here. Henderson wants to be in the pro sports avenue. The Knights are at T-Mobile in the center, and then their practice facility is out in Summerlin. So, you know, they want to be involved. They want to be involved like Summerlin and the Strip, and none of us were really surprised that that happened in the last year.
Was your sense that there is real concern here about the Diamondbacks leaving?
No. Actually, I got the opposite sense. I came away with it thinking I won't be surprised if they're somewhere else in Arizona in the future, but I got the sense I don't – again, I might be wrong. I still have a hard time to believe they'd go out of the 12th market, meaning Major League Baseball, just like I have a hard time they're going to leave the 11th market in Tampa. Now, they might go to different facilities in those places, but those are pretty big markets. You know as well as anyone, the Coyotes haven't made a lot of money in a long time, and they're still there. And why? Most of it's because it's the 12th market, 12th biggest market. So, well, I think Vegas, I do believe baseball goes to 32 at some point. I believe Manfred wants that. I've talked to people who have been in those meetings with him. I think Vegas is far more an option for an expansion team, and it wouldn't surprise me if it ended up in Henderson. I just don't think it's going to be the Diamondbacks. From what I got from the Diamondbacks fans, and, you know, we could only talk to a certain amount of them. We couldn't talk to all of them. They love their team. They've been there for a long time. Sure, they think the park's a little, you know, too big, and there's things they would want improvement. But they don't want to lose that team, at least the people I talk to and our video people talk to. They want that team there.
Yeah, I think most everybody feels the same way here. Ed Graney, a columnist with the Las Vegas Review-Journal, joining us for a few moments on the Brad Sesmatch Show. One other question about baseball, and then I want to transition into the Raiders. You mentioned the Aviators in their new ballpark, and I think you know that their broadcaster, Russ Langer, is a dear friend of mine.
Yes.
They have been – that has been a success times 20 in Summerlin. They've had, what, 42 sellouts this year? And that ballpark seats about 10,000. My question is this. Has the success this year that franchise has had in a state-of-the-art stadium, has it rekindled, reignited the interest that the city would have in a Major League Baseball team, whether it be relocation or expansion?
Boy, that's a great question. Well, there's a couple parts. And obviously, it's rekindled a lot, mostly because it's the ballpark. People are going to see the ballpark as much, if not more, than a AAA baseball team. We know that. It's the same with the Allegiant Football Stadium next year. I've said this in the beginning. UNLV football next year will set an all-time record for attendance. Not so much for the product on the field, but because people don't want to pay NFL prices, but they want to see the stadium. So there's different reasons people in Vegas now go to these venues. Look, baseball has proven time and again because of its revenue streams, it doesn't need a lot of people in parks to still build stadiums. We see it all over in baseball, these new stadiums that are empty now. So their revenue streams are much different in terms of, I don't think butts and seats matter as much. I mean, they matter, obviously, but it won't stop them from expanding. I think they're going to get to 32. The Aviators Park's been, it's beautiful. It's very ironic, though, let's be honest, if whatever reason the baseball expands, the Aviators, I would assume, would be done here. I don't think you're going to have a AAA team in the same town and you know, down the freeway that you have a major league team.
Agreed.
So I know the Aviators people are looking at this very closely, and you know, they're not probably the most excited people in the world to learn that Henderson was in conversations with major league team, but that's not going to stop Henderson, and I don't think it would stop Major League Baseball if they would eventually decide Vegas is an expansion market.
Now let's turn our attention to the Raiders. I was up in Vegas early in July, and I would turn on the morning shows because even though we're in Vegas, I was still getting up at 6 a.m. And the morning TV shows, every morning they're doing something live from that stadium. I mean, every city that gets an NFL team and you've got to wait a couple of years while stadiums being built, et cetera, is excited. I get the sense that Las Vegas is really excited. I mean, they cannot wait for this thing to get finished and get the Raiders in here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of down points about Vegas. One positive point is if it's, they say it's going to build on time, it'll get built. It was always going to be built on time. I laughed thinking back at talking to the Mortensen people when it was first announced. I asked them, will you be on time? And he laughed and he said, we were early in Minnesota. What do you think we're going to do in Vegas? They never stopped. It's 24/7. They add new people every day. So it's going to be built on time and open next summer, and people are very excited. You know, it's going to be interesting to where the what will be the head count in the stadium each week for Raider fans and for visiting fans. I think this now becomes a game. If you go to one game a year away with your team, it's probably one. You used to be San Diego. Maybe now it's Vegas that you circle because the Chargers obviously moved. So you have a lot of visiting fans. We've seen that with the Knights with the original six teams until the Knights really in their second season had to clamp down on that and made it really hard for visiting teams, it's visiting fans to get into T-Mobile to watch hockey. But we'll see that in football. But it'll be full every week. And this is the thing. There's a lot of people who don't like this. It was $750 million in tax, whether it's indirect or direct. That's a whole other show about who it's affecting. But at the end of the day, they're selling like crazy. And they sold their suites, and they sold their expensive tickets, and they sold their PSLs, and they continue to do so. So there's someone out there who wants to see this team, and there's a lot of people spending money to do so. So I do think you're right. I think the hunger is extremely big for this team.
Let me ask you a question, and I'm saying this from the perspective of I'm a native Phoenician, and in the 80s, Phoenix was used a lot by NFL owners as leverage. Now, obviously, that's not a problem in Vegas, but Major League Baseball, you've had this story about the D-backs kind of looking at Henderson. There's probably going to be one or two other teams that may do the same thing before expansion comes. The NBA, and you and I have talked on the show before. By the way, I was at the Summer League, and 4,000 people showed up in the middle of the day, and I told my son, if they can do this in the middle of the day for a Summer League game, the NBA will be here before you know it. But you've been in Las Vegas a long time. I got offended in the mid-'80s watching my hometown get used. And a lot of times before the Cardinals arrived, there were two or three instances of an owner just using my hometown as leverage. Are you concerned that that's going to happen in Las Vegas in regards to baseball and the NBA?
Oh, it certainly could. In fact, I mean, I would be surprised if the Diamondbacks, that wasn't the impetus to even talking to Henderson to get it out there. And whether they say they want it, didn't use it for leverage or not, I mean, you know, the story got broken. And someone fed somebody the story. And I would think the Diamondbacks are looking for a new home in Arizona. Well, how do you push that agenda along? Well, hey, these people want us too. That happens all the time. I think it would happen more for baseball. I agree with you. T-Mobile Arena was built for both the NHL and the NBA. If you've been to T-Mobile Arena, kind of in the bowels of T-Mobile Arena, one side is specifically for hockey. If you keep going around underneath T-Mobile Arena, the other side is specifically made for the NBA. It's already set up. A team could literally move into T-Mobile tomorrow and have everything. Now, they wouldn't have to have the practice facility. That would have to be built. But to play their home games, to exist in T-Mobile Arena, to have a beautiful locker room set up, that's all ready. So I've always been surprised that the NBA isn't here yet. I always thought the NHL would be because someone was going to have to be the guinea pig to come into Vegas and to prove it could work. Now, no one predicted what the Knights did. I mean, no one could have predicted that season, the shooting, what that team meant to the town, and how they responded on the ice. But I think the NBA, I'm almost surprised it isn't here yet because of, like you said, the interest in basketball. It's a basketball town dating to the UNLV games, and there is a place. You know, how many times do you say, well, we just need an arena? Well, the arena's there, and it's ready for them.
I've got about 30 seconds left. If it's relocation with the NBA, the team that I think of, and I don't have the greatest amount of information, is Memphis. I don't think that they're doing as well as a lot of other teams. What are you hearing up there as a potential relocation franchise to come to Las Vegas?
Memphis or New Orleans. New Orleans is weird because it's Benson and the kids, and you know, I think the Saints are never going anywhere, but there's always been the reports that they would move the team or they would sell the team. I do know with MGM's ownership of the Aces, the WNBA team, with their involvement in Summer League, I would be shocked if the MGM wasn't pushing hard to own an NBA team. Now you're talking about a gambling entity, so that's another thing to cross. But if you're asking about the two teams we hear most here, it's always Memphis and New Orleans.
It's an exciting time, as it always is in Las Vegas. And one final note, Ed, Russ Langer's the real mayor of Las Vegas. We both know it.
He is.
There's no question about it.
He's a papa now, and we're
yes, he is.
That, and he's a father. He is. And please pass on my best to Brad for a speedy recovery. I follow him on Facebook. Obviously, all of us who know him, I've known him for decades, hope for speedy recovery as well.
I'll do that, and you'll see Russ before I do. I text Russ a lot, but when you see him, tell him I said hello. Ed,
I will, Jeff.
Appreciate it. Good luck with the radio show. I catch that every so often, so keep her going, and I really appreciate the time today.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye. Ed Graney, one of the really good guys in the sports media business, columnist with the Las Vegas Review-Journal, morning host on ESPN Radio Las Vegas. All right, coming up, our pal Luke Lipinski is going to be in to visit with Jordan Simone, my radio partner on ASU pre and post game. And later on, we'll have a quiz. Which one of us is better looking, me or Simone? Oh, no, not really. I'm kidding. But I'm not kidding about the Luke and Jordan part. We're going to preview ASU next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
All right, Luke Lipinski here with ASU sideline reporter Jordan Simone. Jordan, it's been a long offseason. How's your summer been?
It's been great, man. I've got to go out to ASU's practice lot and check them out during camp, and they look good. I've been saying it for a long time. Jaden Daniels is going to be the guy, and here we are going into the season, and he's the guy.
This is Luke Lipinski here with ASU sideline reporter Jordan Simone. Jordan, let's start with just the overall feel around camp this year. Year two with Herm, so there's more experience on his part. I think just the general vibe seems a little more comfortable and a little more focused on football. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, going into year one, everyone was very confused. Why would you hire Herm Edwards? Everyone's looking at Ray Anderson, like, what is your plan here? And going into year two, that narrative has completely changed to everyone is on the train, excited for this team, excited about the way that they've recruited in the offseason, and now it's time to put the plan in motion. Year one, you had some big victories. Now year two, you expect them to, do better than they did last year and have some big wins.
What are those expectations? I mean, a decent showing last year, I think in a lot of ways it exceeded people's expectations, but now that you have the recruiting class they have, and we know that Herm is he's good at coaching at the college level, what do people expect?
Yeah, well, almost every game was within 7 points last year. I think you want the team to win a couple more of those games now, and you see this transition kind of take place with Herm and, the defense. You want somebody down the line to make a play, and I think that's what they're in position to do now.
Let's start with Jaden Daniels, a quarterback. You have mentioned all along you thought it was going to be him, and what is it about him in your mind that separated him from the rest of the pack?
Yeah, well, he's smart. He's a smart kid. He's the one that was putting in the extra hours, and that's what you want when you have a true freshman quarterback come into a program. You want somebody that's going to, be there late and come early and be bothering the coaches almost with how much, he wants to get better and learn this playbook. And that's something he's done. You have Mike Bercovici, who's a guy that's been around that program and now coaching. And he's off the charts with how much he wants to learn and be better and be the guy for this team.
As far as what he does specifically on the field, I mean, there's a lot of excitement, not just because he's going to be a true freshman starting a quarterback and because he was so highly recruited, but he's just a fun player to watch, too.
Yeah, absolutely. He's electric. He's a dual threat, number two in the country coming out of high school. And you expect him to have some, big plays. here, you know, running the football and you know, taking a deep shot. It also helps when you have, you know, the number one running back in the Pac-12 and Eno Benjamin right behind you.
Yeah, with Eno, okay, you've got a guy that is on national watch lists. I mean, you know him pretty well. How do you think mm-hmm. he'll handle those expectations?
You know, it's always tough when you have a great year, a successful year, you can kind of get in this rhythm where you're not doing the little things like you were last year. You got a lot of media attention. You got cameras in your face, and it's a little bit different. I think the good news is you have NFL, you know, former NFL players in that locker room as coaches that are going to be able to help him just stay focused and keep the main thing the main thing.
You know, they want to run a lot of their offense through him. I mean, Herm's been pretty clear. He's listed off the running backs he's worked with mm-hmm. in the past, and there's some great ones at the NFL level especially. So putting that burden on Eno again and trying to win with the running game and the defense, is that what you envision the plan being?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Herm has said it from the beginning, what travels? A good run game and a great defense, and that's what they have this year. I believe that they have, you know, one of the top two defenses in the league. If you look at, you know, just from a depth standpoint, their linebackers are the best that they've been in a long time. Their safeties are young but experienced because of last year, and then, you know, D-line was something that people were worried about, and now, you know, they've got depth there. They got George Lee, DJ Davidson, and, you know, a handful of other players that are going to be, you know, really talented this year. And I think, you know, sky's the limit for them defensively.
One more on the offensive side of the ball. With N'Keal Harry gone, I mean, this is obviously an issue they knew they were going to have at mm-hmm. some points. And now that he's in the NFL, first-round pick and everything, you can't replace him with one guy. But are you comfortable with the collection of receivers they have there now?
Yes, absolutely. They have depth at the receiver position. You know, Brandon Ayuk is a guy last year that kind of popped towards the end of the season, especially in that bowl game when N'Keal was out. And he looks like a completely different athlete. You know, he had a great off season in the weight room with Coach Joe Connolly. Not to mention Frank Darby looks, you know, like a completely different player as well. And so to have that, you know, that great off season of work to, you know, build speed, size, and really get out and run routes and get better. They have some talent. Not to mention a true freshman that's come in that they are more excited about than anybody is Jordan Curley, who's a kid out of Texas that it has showed that he could be as good as anybody, and in the future they're comparing him to a Robert Woods from USC. So it's going to be a bright future.
With the true freshmen stepping in, and it was Ashari Crosswell last year, and mm-hmm. Merlin Robertson and some other guys, and then obviously Jaden Daniels this year, as a recruit, when you not only hear a coach say he's willing to play young players if they earn it, but he actually steps up and does yeah. it. I mean, even at the quarterback position now, what does that do for a recruit?
You know, I think it just tells you that they're going to give you the opportunity. If you could play, if you're the best player, you will play. We don't care if we have, you know, someone that's been here. And you know what? It's one thing because the seniors that are there aren't Herm's guys. And so he necessarily doesn't have a problem saying, hey, I'm going to put, you know, this freshman who is going to be better than you in four games. So it makes sense logically, but you got guys that have been around the program that want to play. And you know, ultimately that makes everybody better. When there's competition within the team, it makes everyone better at the end of the day. And that's really what you want.
How about the defense now getting experience for some key players that were freshmen last year? And Danny Gonzalez he's very adamant about turning this into a dominant defense, whether mm-hmm. that's this year or next year. And you bring in Marvin Lewis. I mean, you have that defensive yeah. mind influence as well. What do you see from this defense this year?
It's going to be the best defense the ASU has had in the last 5 to 8 years, I think. It is the most stacked defense, and they're all sophomores for the most part. Yeah. You know, it's insane. You look at the, you know, Ashari Crosswell, a kid that I compare now to Demarius Randall from 2014, and just the way that he tracks the ball. And he catches 3 more interceptions last year. He's leading the country in picks and probably being talked about as, you know, one of the best in the country and a freshman All-American. He just missed that mark last year, but look for them to take strides. Then you have a kid named Evan Fields, who is another one of those freshmen that got in the weight room and looks like a completely different player as well. It's scary when you look at this defense. Nobody's talking about him either.
Yeah,
nobody's
yeah.
talking about him. And they only lost games by 7 points last year. Most of their games were by 7 points besides the bowl game. And so you get an offense that can run the football and a quarterback in Jaden Daniels that makes smart plays, then the defense is going to take care of the rest.
And that's the plan, right? You don't want to put too much pressure on Jaden Daniels, mm-hmm. even if he can live up to the expectations. You don't want to put too much pressure on him in year one, especially in week one.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, that's a lot of pressure on a freshman quarterback to come in and be expected to, you know, take this team to, you know, a 10-win season. I think they can do it, though. I really do. I believe that Jaden Daniels has the tools to be able to step in and make smart decisions. And you know what? somebody told me a long time ago, if you're a quarterback and you throw the check down, you'll be an All-American. You just don't turn the football over. You'll have, 250 yards a game, and you go and win.
Worked for Tom Brady in his first couple years.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's still working for him.
Yeah, it is still working for Tom. Offensive line, you have some guys that are mainstays that have been there for a little while, but there's also some inexperience if you start to go too deep into it. And you can't predict injuries, and you can only do so much to prevent them. But over the course of the season, how do you think that offensive line will hold up?
Going into this year, I was not worried about the offensive line at all. They're probably the last thing I was worried about. They have depth. They have guys with game experience. Now it's the position that I am most worried about. They lose Zach Robertson for whatever reason. They haven't come out and publicly said it. And you move Cole Cabral, who was a staple at the center position and probably going to be drafted as a center, to left tackle. And now that adds a little bit of a shift on the offensive line. But Coach Christensen, their offensive line coach, is a great coach. We'll get them in the right place. They have enough experience up there to be able to shuffle some guys around. And, at the end of the day, you got Eno Benjamin. All you got to do is hold the block for 3 seconds and he'll be gone right by you. And then, in the pass game, you're going to have to help that young freshman quarterback get comfortable.
With that addition of Marvin Lewis and the general NFL influence on this team, I guess two-part question. What do you see Marvin Lewis's role being this year? But then also, sort of back to the recruiting, what does just having those NFL pipelines do for a high school player that's highly touted and is looking for a college?
It's huge. It's huge. At the end of the day, every player that's coming into college football has the dream of going to the NFL. Where better in the country do you have more, there's not more experience in the country from an NFL standpoint in coaches at ASU. You have Marvin Lewis, who was a 16-year head coach for the Bengals. Then you have Herm, obviously, in his background. Kevin Mawai, a Hall of Famer. Antonio Pierce, a Super Bowl winning captain of that team. And so there's so much experience from the NFL in that building. And if I'm a kid coming out of high school and my ultimate dream, I know, is to go to the NFL, I'm not going anywhere else but ASU.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jordan.
Appreciate it, Luke.